Hi everyone, my name is Mark Esper and welcome to No Spoiler Reviews in this special extended podcast where I'll be talking to Pascal Rescher about her career as a Hollywood makeup artist. Hi Pascal.
Hi Mark, I'm blushing.
There's no need to blush. Welcome to the show.
Well, thank you for inviting me.
Can you introduce yourself to the listeners and explain what you do and some of the projects you've been involved in?
Yes, so I started 20 years ago in France, so first school there, did lots of TV and photo shoot, and in 2008 moved to London. And as I was starting fresh, I decided to really focus on film, which was the thing I've always wanted to do, but for some reason couldn't get in France. So I started working on projects like Sherlock Holmes and London Boulevard, and on, by the magic of life, managed to get on projects like Fury, Guardian of the Galaxy, Fantastic Beast, this kind of big project, as well as some independent one like Come Away or The Man in Hat, just coming online at the moment. So a really wide range of project and productions.
Cool. And what motivated you to become a makeup artist? And more importantly, what motivated you to move into films?
So I've always loved the characters and the clues that you can see in film. It's all that storytelling, character building that really, really intrigues me. I've been a student in French literature. That's how everything started. So for me, the story, the things you read and you understand without the obvious, it's what I love. It's making sure that you forget it's a film and you're just soaked in all those clues. And I had, when I was in my French literature studies, had a massive breakup, massive depression, and the only thing that would pull me out was actually to do makeup on friends, and started talking about it to my friends who were all directors or editors, and they were like, oh yeah, great, we haven't got a makeup artist yet in the team, so go do that. Big joke. And yeah, that's how I started with them, doing my first short film, did my training, 2 years training in Paris, and as they say, the rest is history. But it's always been about the characters and the clues, the storyline. I just love that. Creating a new world that you understand just by watching.
So how often do you find that when you look at a script, the script tells you what is needed in terms of makeup? Or is it something that you have to kind of bring to the party yourself?
A bit of both, because basically you read it and you have to translate it into makeup. So if I read she runs and falls on the floor and tears roll down, I know that I may have had some sweat on her because maybe she's not hot yet when she starts running the first day. Mm-hmm. I'm going to make maybe some colors on the cheek from the first scene because I know that after 10 times we try to film that scene, she's going to be red, but maybe she's not going to be red at the beginning. I need to have fake tears to make sure that if for any reason the tears can't come, which happens sometimes, actors, some do cry more easily than others. Sometimes you've got an eye that for a reason you don't understand won't cry. Only one's going to cry. Mm-hmm. It happened. So you had to top up on the other eyes to make sure that it looks normal. And because it's really hard, I've done scenes when someone needs to cry, like a really long split-up scene, for example. And you have that scene where the actress is supposed to cry for 7 days because it takes 7 days to film that scene. She may not be able to bring that out every day, 8 hours a day. So I need to be really conscious of that and have the material to help her, support her, so that she can cry more easily.
I've got to ask this question. On balance, how does it go? Do you find the British actors can cry easier than the Americans?
It's really not there. It's really personal. Some people can laugh really easily on demand. Some people can cry on demand. It's really individual. Mm-hmm. And it's really incredible to see and watch because I can't do that. I'm a really bad actor, terrible actor. They can do it. They just, you know, it's like a fiber in them that's there. Mm-hmm. And yeah. I never know when I start working with someone. I never know.
So you don't know until the day.
Yeah. It's always at the ready. We've got all the things in our bag just in case. Because you can have been with someone who's been amazing at crying for 5 days and then the last day it's not coming out. Mm-hmm. You know, they're not machines. So it's, you have to be ready for everything. That's why we've got those huge bags on set. Mm-hmm. Because we've got all the things in tiny amounts so that we can do anything.
Gotcha. So, okay, how do you make somebody cry?
So we've got a few different tricks up our sleeves. You've got the low-key, really easy, low-budget onions. Mm-hmm. That's for, you know, short films and all of that. Otherwise, we've got what we call tear stick. So basically, it's a little apparel with some mint in it, and you really gently blow some hair through that, and that kind of irritate the eyes just enough to make it a bit more watery, a bit red. And I'm not sure if that's used nowadays because of everything. You also have fake tears. You can actually draw on people. Mm-hmm. So you actually just draw with a brush and you delicately start the tear. Because sometimes it's a really wide shot, so you just need to have something. So sometimes they just put something a bit minty on their fingers and kind of rub their eyes near to their eyes. And sometimes it's really close up, so you need to have that one drop falling. So usually there's a makeup artist that's next to the person if they can't cry like this. And we just make it so that there's that one line of fake tears that goes down exactly for that really big close-up.
So when you're sat at home and you're watching films just for fun, for pleasure, are you sitting there looking at the screen and you're watching it and kind of going, that's a fake tear, or nope, that's real? Can you tell the difference yourself?
No. First, because some makeup artists are amazing. Also because even special effects, sometimes reality is weirder than makeup. So some things look really wrong, but actually they're real. Mm-hmm. So you can never tell. Sometimes I see mistakes or I see things I wouldn't have done the same way, but I can't judge because I wasn't there on the day. So I wouldn't judge ever the makeup artist because the condition can have been really different and difficult. There's always that one scene. It's, you know, we're supposed to wrap at 6. It's 5 to 6. We've done a big crowd day and, oh, they've got the idea that they can do that scene with the prostitution on the floor with the skulls crushed. And in 5 minutes, they ask us to make it look like her skull has been crushed. Mm-hmm. So we just have to, in 1 minute, throw all our artistry at it to make it look like a brain is scattered with everything we've got in our bag. They film for 3 minutes and it's done.
Yeah.
So we try not to do that, but it happens. There's always the last shot any time. So many times you can tell if something a bit difficult and tricky has to be done, they're going to want to make it on the last shot. I don't know how that happens, but always happens. It's the curse. So, yeah, it's really, I can't judge because I know how it is. Sometimes you're not allowed to do the last check. Sometimes you didn't have the time you wanted to do your change. So, yeah, I see things that are sometimes weird, but I can't judge.
What advice would you give anybody thinking about embarking a career as a makeup artist in feature films?
So, first, watch films and watch people. So, I know when you take, you know, if you go any places, look how beards sit on someone's face. Look how people look tired. Why someone feel like he's tired when you look at them. Why someone looks ill when you look at them. Really soak in all those clues. Because when you have to recreate that, you need to have your point of references. So building yourself a massive library of references, proper pictures of real injuries, casualties to look at, and not what you think you would look at. Don't do that Halloween can makeup, please. It's dangerous and it's really bad. And it doesn't prove your artistry. So if you want to get into film and show that you can do effects, try to do the most simple things like a good bruise. That will show people your talent, your eye. how much you want things to look the right way because you've done your research and you've done a good bruise, instead of making something that may look really exciting and all your friends are like, wow, it's so cool. But for a professional, they can't judge, because when do you have to put a can on someone in a film? Not often. When do you need to make a bruise? Really often. So behind a bruise, there's a story. You can explain why the bruise is like this or like that. You can show your research. You can show your process, your thinking. Mm-hmm. And that's going to get you more work because you've got the basic in place. Mm-hmm. So really think basic. Don't try to show off. Research. Build your library of references. Practice, practice, practice. Look for feedback. Plenty of groups where people can give you feedbacks. And really come with the idea that you want the feedback, because that's something I've seen a lot. People show their stuff. They want to be motivated. Mm-hmm. And I understand that, because it's hard to practice. But they pushed off all the feedback they get. And it's a massive opportunity missed of learning and connecting with people who've been in the industry for 10 years, 15 years, 20 years. So it's really about learning and getting things. When I started in London, I've been a hair and makeup artist for 10 years, but I was learning the period part of the hair. And I had to learn, I had to look, and I had to put my ego aside, because even makeup-wise, I was learning the English way, all the little tricks. I wasn't that good with facial when I arrived, because that's not something I had experience on in France from the project I had to work on.
Mm-hmm.
You need to keep learning. It's not a trade where you can think, I'm good now. I don't need to learn anymore. You will always learn. There's always going to be a new technique, a new character that push you, a new product. So you need to be aware that you will never stop learning. And the more you embrace the learning and the failing, the further you're going to be able to go in your career.
I imagine on top of all of the technical aspects, there's also a philosophical approach that is required. Because if you're now working on a big budget feature film, I imagine that part of the role involves a veil of secrecy.
Yes.
About what you can say, what you can't say, whether you can talk to the talent, or how much you are able or allowed to talk to the talent. And more importantly, what you're prepared to discuss or what you can discuss offset.
Yeah, because the first rule whenever you work on a film is don't disturb. That's the first thing. So don't get in shot. Don't make shadows on set. Don't be noisy on set. That's the first thing. Don't disturb the work of other people. Don't get in the way. The thing I'm seeing is going to be, it's a huge machine. So obviously there's what you see on set, but it's also all the production, all the marketing of the project. It's a huge machine with lots of cogs. So if you take a picture and you release it, they get really angry, because that kind of puts sand in the machine. You are not respecting the timeline of what they want to share. It can put things at risk as well. So I know some people have been fired from jobs because they took pictures and they shared it on social media.
Mm-hmm.
And everything is kind of checked. I know we had problem with paparazzi on some project because they wanted to steal a shot. So I know on Fury, we had a guy trying to get in, nearly getting in, because he came in costume as a soldier. But because he was not a costume person, he made some mistake in his costume and he was spotted early enough. But the more you share on social media, even where you film, then there's a risk of someone picking up on it and finding where you shoot. So all the structure, all the feeling of safety for the actors as well, that can be damaged if you share anything. So you quite often you have to sign a contract when you start, and you're not supposed to share the important stuff. And when you release any pictures, quite often it's kind of organized with the production, or at least you have their green signal, because it's too important nowadays and things can go wrong in plenty of ways. So if in doubt, don't post.
Fair enough. I think that's solid advice. I imagine the work is quite haphazard by nature. It's not like week in, week out. How do you find your gigs?
Ah, that is the $1 million question, isn't it? So for me, how it started, I went to a makeup school back in London, and that's where I met my first teachers, who were actual hairdressers, who were working in the industry. So the lady who managed the school is also a makeup designer, so she got everybody a few days for work experience and then for your first trainee days. And from there, you start to grow your network. You start talking to people, you help around, you make teas. People think that it's useless to build a career because you can't show your makeup skills, but you show your attitude. You show how you can be around other people and how you can be part of the team and what kind of asset you can be. So that's where you start. I had people liking me, introducing me to other people because I would remember how they liked their coffee. Mm-hmm. So I was making the coffee exactly the way they wanted without them having to tell me every day. And they would feel so taken care of that they would introduce me to everybody and say, oh, do you know Pascal? She's so lovely. She's made my coffee exactly how I like it.
Mm.
That's how things start. You create connection. And then you spend hours, some days on set, it's 12-hour, 14-hour, sometimes 15-hour days. So you reconnect with people. And then they get to see you at work. They get to see what you're good at. People knew quickly. I'm always up to run somewhere, grab something, help in general, hold pins. Even as an artist or as a supervisor, I would do that for someone else.
Mm.
Because I'm in a team. I don't have an ego. I'm part of the team. That's what matters. I'm also really motivated to do, you know, checks on set. I'm not the most amazing period hairdresser, but I will do checks even at 4 a.m. if it's a night shoot. Other people, they're going to be much stronger hairdressers, but they may need to be reminded to do checks, for example, because right, they don't have the same stamina or they kind of relax a bit more during the night. I'm stubborn, so I want the checks to stay. So when people create their team, they look at the full picture. They look at who do I need to make the whole project go. So they're going to have some people who are going to be exceptional hairdressers because they're going to be sure they can lean on them for the really difficult looks. They're going to have some all-rounders who are going to be able to go a bit everywhere and deal with most of the task. They're going to have people who are really good at doing the checks and making sure that the looks are maintained. They're going to have people who are just lovely trainees who are going to be really helpful, even though they don't have the knowledge yet. But they will be welcome and taken on board because the attitude is of someone who wants to help, who wants to learn. And it just makes the day easier.
Mm. Is this attitude something that you have to be born with, or is it something you can actually learn?
I would say both. I know I've got that thing where I like my people to be comfy, and that's something that got me jobs because people could see I would help, you know, grab drinks, clean for them. That helps kind of break the ice because I take care of them. But you can be taught that. You can, if you know you want to be more of a team person, if you're clever enough, you observe and you see what's going on, you can realize, okay, I need to be a bit less shy. I can get out of myself. I can learn how to not talk on set. I can learn how to observe what people do, how fast they get in on set. All the little rules of the set you can learn. So it's easier if you have a base in you, but you can learn it. If you observe, you can learn.
Excellent. So if you go back in time and you could meet your former self at the beginning of your career, what words of advice would you give yourself?
So first, I would say stop comparing yourself to people who've been in this industry 20 years more than you, because I've always thought I was doing rubbish work because I was comparing myself to people who've been doing this for 20, 30 years, which is stupid because you can't. There's no point. Everybody's got their place on a project depending on their skill level and their attitude. And I would also say be more yourself, because in film, you work really closely and sometimes physically closely. You are in tiny spaces waiting to go do your checks. You need to come as a human natural, genuine human. And I think I was so shy and trying to do well that was kind of blurring my personality and my relationship with people. And in film, people want people they can relate to because of the conditions. So being yourself, being still polite, but being yourself, being a bit more lively, a bit less shy, and not hesitating to introduce yourself and talk to people, that makes a massive difference. And that would be the main thing.
So on all the films and shoots that you've done, who have been your favourite cast and crew to work with?
Ooh, this is so difficult to say. Because every project and every person are different. And I'm really grateful from Connie Daniel. She took me as a crowd supervisor a few years back on Come Away, which was an amazing film. And she's been so supportive, really believed in me and the fact that I could do this. So I've got a special place for her. And all the team that we had on Fantastic Beast and Tarzan, and it's a crew that I've been working with a lot, and we had lots of giggles to face the difficult days. And I just love those people. Just knowing I was having a breakfast with them before doing the day and having all the giggles made the work much easier. So that was something. After that, cast is difficult to think. I know I've got two massive memories. When I was a trainee, junior on Hugo from Scorsese, I was helping both the hair designer and the crowd. So I was going back and forth. And I came to the green room one day and Christopher Lee was there. And he heard my name, he heard my French accent, and started talking to me about France and all his memory. He used to be really educated about all sorts of things about France. And he asked me to kiss his cheek. And every time he would see me in the green room, he would tell me, "Where's my kiss then?" And he would just show me his cheeks. And he felt so surreal. It was just, I felt like I was 5 years old again and being asked by Father Christmas to come and sit on his lap. I didn't sit on his lap. But it was just surreal. And he was so knowledgeable and gentle. And that's, you know, a massive memory. I've been really lucky. I had amazing people. On London Boulevard, first day, really, really shy Pascal, came back with my coffees in the green room. And Keira Knightley was in the chair. And it was my first day on the job, on this job. And I didn't ask before to Kristen Blundell how close I was allowed to be for the cast. I was really green. And she spotted me in the mirror, make the biggest smile and say, "Oh, hello." And it was like a hug. And I felt so welcome. And I just walked in and Kristen realized what happened and she burst laughing. She was like, "Yeah, it's fine. Just come in, put the coffee on the table." But that was, you know, that was a gift, that hello, because I was so shy and visibly stuck. So, yeah, there's been some amazing memories like this.
I imagine when you get, when you're looking for work, you're going to be looking at lots of scripts and lots of projects that are put in front of you. How do you know which are the right projects to choose and which are the best ones to pass on?
So there's going to be a couple of things. First is how the person talk about the project. I had project where people say, "Oh, you know, it's just powder on nose. This is a red flag." Because that tells me they don't understand makeup or hair. That tells me they don't really value it. And good chance they're not going to respect my work on set. So I tend to move away from that. Also, people who don't put in contract things really clear. I had a job I said no to because we were supposed to go away for 4 weeks and the number of day off were not clear. We were supposed to travel between location and that was on our day off. 6 day week, 1 day off, and the day off was actually a travel day. I was like, "No, this is not right." Mm. And I'm really happy I didn't do this job because I heard horrible stories. The crew was and cast were not treated properly. So spotting if you will have proper rest, if people understand what they're doing, if they are really clear about what they say, it's always something I look into now, making sure they don't undervalue what's to do. That's something. If it's a big job, usually the bigger the job, the easier it is in a way, because things are really put into place. Where you need to be really careful is with all the independent jobs and places where people may either have done things in a bit of an independent way, so not really in a classic way, or they are learning and they may not be aware of what you need. So you need to really be clear on your side about what you need and be really tough about it, because that otherwise can really bite you back and you don't want that.
So, I mean, you've worked on all of these big assignments. So the Guardians of the Galaxy, Downton Abbey, all this other stuff. Are there any particular dream jobs or dream filmmakers or directors that who you think, I really want to work with this person?
I would love to work with Genet. That's always been a thing. I've been really lucky. I've managed to have days on the Blood and Ice Cream trilogy. That was a dream of mine. So that's done. Otherwise, nowadays, not as much. I kind of trust the process. For The Man in the Hat, I got to do makeup on Maiwenn Lobisco, which is an icon of mine. And it's been for years because she used to be a child actor as well, and now she's a director. And I love her acting, but I also love what she stands for as a woman. She's really strong-willed and she speaks her mind and stands for her truth. So being able to do her makeup, I had a really special smile, I think, that day. I may have hugged the producer who got me on the job, who introduced me and asked me to come and talk about the project, because, yeah, that was a really special thing for me, really.
Excellent. Okay, and so what was the funniest thing that happened for you on set?
On set, I don't know. There was something really funny on Guardian. So on Guardian, we were doing lots of night shoot. We had lots of those things. And at the time, I was in London. I was going dancing on Saturdays. And I go to my dance. I'm thinking, I'm going to stay on night shoot pace, because otherwise I can't go back to daytime on the weekend. And
right.
I was really nonstop on night shoot. So I go to my party. Start talking to a guy next to me, and we both complain that we're really tired because we're working nights. I'm like, oh, really? What kind of work do you do? Oh, I can't really talk because I work in film, and you know, I've got those NDAs. I can't say anything. And he's like, well, funny, me too. And I was like, ah, oh, so you're working nights at the moment? Yeah. Are you in West London? Yeah. And we shared just the name of the studio.
Yeah.
And we were like, oh, we're on the same film. And he was an actual background. So from that day, he would look for me and we would be chatting all the time.
Cool.
And it was just really, really funny moment, random, being in that small salsa class in the suburb and finding that we are working on the same project and the same thing. Otherwise, yeah, I've got an epic memory being on, that must have been Maleficent. Snow White. That's the one.
Snow White. Snow White and the Huntsman.
Yes.
Okay.
So we had those scene with all the horses on the beach riding. Amazing. Never put as much dirt, I think, on anything. And end of the day, we need to go back. And Pascal, being a bit too spontaneous and not really well balanced, trip on one big stone, open my skull. At the back of my head, got stuck, like feet up, couldn't get back on my feet. Had two massive guys from security coming, grabbing me like I'm Liza Minnelli, putting me back on my feet. Me being like, I'm fine, I'm fine. Friends of mine looking at me, white-faced, and no, Pascal, you're not. And then seeing everybody's face being really like stuck in horror. Me feeling something quite tickly on me and realize, I'm dripping blood and I don't even realize it. So I've been glued. My skull has been glued on the beach in Wales during the film.
Wow.
Yeah. And they had to look at me because we were away for a week. So I was not allowed to do some things after that, just in case. So some scenes I was prepping at base and I wasn't allowed to go on set because I was too dangerous.
Yeah, you're too fragile. Yeah.
So I had to stay back at base and clean the things and yeah, that.
Oh man.
That was really, memories. But yeah, so many memories. You visit places that are incredible. On the Crown, we got to film in two places on Panmore, which are insane houses, gorgeous. You visit places, you get stuck in the mud. There's all sorts happening. And I think because you get tired, you get more giggly as well at some point. So, I've got lots of really good memories.
So has there been much corpsing on set?
No, I think we're quite good at doing our thing. But yeah, sometimes they play and they poke at you a tiny bit. So Colin Farrell, when we were on London Boulevard, he was teasing me because I was too shy. I didn't even dare looking at him at some point. So he was on purpose being like, "Hello, Pascal, you're right." And I was, I think, just blushing and be like, yeah, and just focusing on my thing. Every film is going to be different. Some actors, they really like to be on their own. They focus on their thing. Some, you can't tell them enough to not talk because you just want to cry laughing because they're too funny. It's always a change. On Fury, I also had to go on a tank to give, you know, do my checks and give the fake teeth because everybody had fake teeth. And people were lovely, just, you know, trying to help, going down a bit from the tank. And yeah, it's things happen. You get connected to people. You get to talk. You get to know people. It feels a bit like family sometimes. With exactly what happens in family. Sometimes you argue, some people you feel more comfy with, some people you really don't feel comfy with. Just life.
No, fair enough. Fantastic. Thank you for coming in, Pascal. That was wonderful. That was really, really interesting. And I wish you the very best for the next project, which obviously you can't talk about.
Exactly.
So I hope you enjoyed this interview. If you're interested in hearing other interviews, please download them from No Spoiler Reviews. I look forward to bringing you another interview, hopefully in the next couple of weeks. All the best. Bye now.